So nice to be here. May the infinite divine and the great masters be present with us this evening, pouring their blessings and their peace, their inspiration and their guidance in all we do and say. Amen. Well, it's wonderful to be here. Thinking about what I should talk about tonight, what God wants to talk about tonight. I saw the horn of plenty over here, and the fact that we have an entire day set aside for Thanksgiving. It's a wonderful thing. Abraham Lincoln was the first to inaugurate a day of Thanksgiving after the completion of the Civil War. And isn't it true that when we come through a period of crisis, that we do and we should feel that sense of Thanksgiving? One of the things that it's difficult for many of us is to mark anniversary points, to note when we have beginnings and middles and completions. And so oftentimes we run from one thing to the next without ever taking the time for appreciation, for thanksgiving, for the completion of a project, for coming to a point in our lives where our lives change and we move from one stage to another. And in the spiritual path, this is perhaps even more difficult to do when you belong to an orthodox path. There are classes that are attended, perhaps certificates that are earned. Certainly in life, there are degrees, perhaps, that we enter into a university. There are moments when we have those natural sense of completion. Our spiritual journey seems somehow different from that, in that we are always on the journey. The moment that we seem to complete one area of our lives, something else is immediately in our midst, and we are busy with that. The negative side of that can be that we always feel like we're behind the eight ball, that we're never kind of rising up or rising above our situations. There is the idea that I had one time when I was watching a young person play a video game, where in the video game, the moment that they got a sense of mastery at one level, they dropped through a trap door and they entered into a more difficult level where the things that were coming at him came faster, there was more of them, they were more difficult. And I thought, isn't that exactly how the spiritual path is that we seem to get at some level of self-mastery at one level and immediately we're dropped down to the next level. And sometimes we can think of ourselves, we're not making any progress because it seems like I'm dealing with this more difficult issue now. And if I were making progress, wouldn't life be getting easier, not more difficult? If you take the video game analogy, the fact that you're at a more difficult level is actually a compliment to you. It is a note of completion. Something that you completed at the previous level, and that has qualified you to go to the next level. But if you don't know that, if you don't have that in your mind, then you can feel like you're never really accomplishing what you set out to do. You never really get to that sense of self-mastery. A very fundamental idea that came to me one time was that we are here on this earth to work. And that oftentimes we feel as if something is difficult, if something is challenging, if things don't go just right in our life, we've done wrong. Our life is wrong. And because of that, we begin to form a negative attitude about ourselves or about this world. And again, if we can see that this world is filled with challenges, and that those challenges are helping us to grow, and when the more difficult ones come, it's because we have the ability to handle them. And if you have some issue that comes back to you, and you thought, oh, I thought I already did this. I thought I already had self-mastery of this. And suddenly I'm thrown back in the midst of it, and I seem like I'm back to square one or worse. It's not because you've gone backwards. It's because you have dropped down to the next level of difficulty in that area. And so the challenges comes stiffer. The obstacles come more often, and there are more of them. And what you must know is that that divine light that is within you is capable. It is capable of showing you what to do, how to deal with it, and our part is to attune ourselves to that divine light, that grace that resides within us. We are not alone. And that that grace will show us what to do moment to moment, day to day. And it's when we think that we are the doer that we step out of that flow of grace. And that creates the difficulty. That creates all the consternation that we have to face then. But when we have that complete and utter faith that this life is unfolding exactly as it ought to be, that's such a wonderful story of Swami Satchidananda. First, reading those words that Papa wrote, the world is exactly the way it ought to be. Now, many of us would hear that. Perhaps it would have no impact on us at all, or we would think, well, that's an interesting notion. There would be a whole array of reactions to that. But Swami Satchidananda thought to himself, it would take a very great man to be able to say such a thing. Somebody of extraordinary realization. I want to meet him. And immediately he got on the train and went to go see him. Because he was searching for truth. He demanded to know the truth. And so he is a sincere seeker. We are all on this journey together. Whenever we enter onto the path in a conscious way, we have invisible forces that come in that support us. And to inwardly attune ourselves to those forces, to that grace, to that light that is already accomplished, it is already what we yearn and hope to be. And yet, in most of us, it resides dormant. In order to awaken it, we must give the instructions. We must make the demand that that light awaken within us, that we are no longer satisfied with ourselves conducting our own state of business alone. But we look to that light, we look to that infinite presence. And when we do that, we feel as if we are being guided. We look for instructions when we get into those everyday circumstances. We don't separate out our spiritual path from the rest of our life. Our life is our spiritual path. It is our sadhana. There is no separation. Any thought, any idea of separation is a complete delusion. Every aspect of your life is your sadhana. No matter how mundane, no matter how much you might think, oh, that's of the world, that doesn't belong to my spiritual path. It's not so, because it is all consciousness. It is the infinite intelligence and power of God that has gone into creating all of this universe. And yet our mind will not accept that. It wants to reject it. And the fundamental schism comes from the fact that we are denying that presence of God within us. And that only by accepting it, by receiving it, can we come into the completeness and the wholeness of our spiritual self. It was a very interesting thing that I was shown at one point, that in this material world, it's a rough place. We know it. We live in it. We've grown up in it. There are difficulties. There are pains. There is discord between people. In many ways, we are disappointed and we hurt and are hurt by the things that go on in this life. But it is precisely because of those difficulties, the degree of difficulty that is here, that we have to draw upon the light and the divine grace that is within us in order to sustain ourselves, in order to survive. In order to meet those difficulties, we have to go inside and draw so heavily on that light, open ourselves so broadly to it. Now, in the astral worlds, we are much more with kindred spirits. We are in an environment that is much more friendly to us. The support is there, but also we do not have to draw upon the light in the same way. In the causal world, even more so. More subtle, more sublime. More wonderful is the life, but also the challenges that we face here are unique to being here in this material creation. And because they are so difficult at times, because they can be so heart-rending, we are in a position where we have to open ourselves to that divine light, power, and intelligence more greatly than any other place, just in order to survive. And because of that, our spiritual progress can be so great here. When we do that, when we focus our minds upon that light that is indwelling presence, then we progress spiritually. When we become preoccupied with the things of this world, then we gradually build a prison around ourselves, but that becomes so suffocating to us that at some point we have to burst out of that and leave it behind. Many people build cages all around themselves. Some of them are dark prisons. Some of them are golden cages. Some of them are fanciful cages. Some of them are very rigid rules. This is how the world is. This is how things work. And that's all it is. Better get used to it, Buster. And it is a reflection of each person's evolution and their intelligence and the openness of their heart as to what they construct their world of. They are actually looking in a mirror. And that mental mirror, they determine They determine what that's going to look like. And you can tell by the words that they use, by their actions, by their thought process, much about a person. Just by paying attention, they tell you about themselves. And it's wonderful and it's interesting. And you see how people build cages around themselves in their lives. And then they want you to come in and join them, of course. Or be in a cage that's lower than they are, of course. That's always a possibility as well. But when you see the construct of a cage, that's their mental process. That's their thoughts. That's their feelings. That's their condition in this moment. And so you can just accept that person for who they are in that moment. You don't have to try to change their mental construct. Enjoy it. It's part of God's play. God's infinite nature and light resides within that heart, within that person. And when God is ready, God awakens himself within that person. And no one can stop it, not even the individual. But if you try to wake a sleeping person, watch out. I knew a fellow who was in the military, and he was a drill sergeant. He learned a very important lesson one time because he went to wake up a fellow who was sleeping very soundly. He shook him by the shoulder, and the fellow rolled around and hit him in the jaw, just hard, knocked him down to the ground. He said, after that, I always shook people by their feet. Stay out of the way of those flying fists. And so some people don't like to be awakened. And if you try to shake them too much, they come out swinging. And then they roll over and they go back to sleep again. And dream some more, this dream of material creation. So we don't have to go around trying to wake the whole world. We can awaken ourselves. And when we ourselves are awake, then others who are groggily coming awake themselves will look to us for something, for that awakening, for opening the eyes and entering into a different world, an inner world, a world of light and spiritual understanding, and leaving behind their old dream world so that they might discover more greatly who and what they are. And as we go through that awakening, we can give thanksgiving. Even when that awakening is not yet complete, just the fact that we have placed our feet upon that path is sufficient for gratitude. The fact that we are striving for something different, for something higher, is worthy of gratitude. How many lifetimes, Jesus once said, so many prophets have wished to see what you are seeing. Now, when we take that inwardly, how many lifetimes have we yearned for awakening, to be on the path, to really put our feet on the path? How long have we waited for that? And here we are, we have the opportunity. We're in this material creation where exactly that awakening needs to happen. We have consciously put our feet on the path. And we are seeking to awaken ourselves. We are putting our best effort forward. And that alone is worth gratitude. Especially when it's compared to how many lifetimes we've wandered in ignorance and alone and in darkness, and never had a thought or a whim towards that awakening. And we are here to work. We are here for sadhana. That is the purpose for us taking incarnation. So if there are difficulties that arise in our life, it's not because our life is wrong. We are on the battlefield, and that's exactly where we belong. And to take gratitude, to take joy in being on the battlefield. Life does not have to be drudgery or burden or heaviness. The battle can be fought in joy. How can I learn from this situation? How can I grow? Here I am. Isn't this exciting? Life is exciting. It is joyful. It is fulfilling. It is the completeness of everything you ever hoped to be right now, right here. And so oftentimes we take away from that, wishing that we were someplace else, that we were somehow different, we were better. We could do it better. We could do it perfectly. But where we're at is exactly where we ought to be. The world is exactly as it ought to be. And when these dark forces rise up, either within our own personal lives or within the life of the world, it is a challenge to the light that is within us. And for us to draw on that light in greater measure, so that we might be a tower of that light, even within the darkness. And if the world does not agree with us or does not see why we think the way that we think, that is fine. That is fine. We let that go. We let that go. And we focus in on that inner certainty, that place where we know the truth within ourselves. And we stay focused there. If I am right with God, then everything else is right. And that is my only requirement in life, is to know that I am straight with God, that I am right with that highest light and that highest truth within me. And the whole rest of the world may disagree with me. But where am I if I let go of that light in order to agree with this world? I'm lost. I'm lost. And I have betrayed those relationships that are in my life because I've taken away from that possibility and that responsibility for leading others in the light, not because I take on a leadership role in any particular way, but because of the example of who we are. So we can take great gratitude for our lives exactly as they are right now because it is exactly the way it ought to be. And we can quit wishing that we were somehow different or somebody different. And we can begin to awaken to the fact that this is the perfect time and the perfect place for every one of us. I can say with complete sincerity that my gratitude and being given the opportunity to travel with you in this journey, I have great gratitude for that. That this life, this search for truth, will always be fundamentally an individual one. But how wonderful, how beautiful when we can share in that path, when we can support each other and love each other and give to each other in whatever measure God has given us to give. And it is through that giving that we create something that is greater than ourselves. As Jesus said, where two or more are gathered in my name, in that Christ consciousness name, there I am. When two people or more gather together, focused on that uplifting power of light and consciousness, there that Christ presence comes in even greater measure. And so there is a synergy that the total is more than the sum of the parts. And that is true any time we come together with that wonderful purpose in mind. So never forget to treat that as a sacred honor to be able to come together minds and hearts and souls focused upon that great self-realization of which we are looking to awaken to. Keep that as a sacred trust. And whoever comes is God coming. And whoever said that God needs to come in great numbers. One God is sufficient. If God is present, that is sufficient. And that means that the purity of purpose is perfect in all that it needs to be, and then you can take great gratitude in the feeling of that presence in the room between us and all about us. And that presence can spread out and help a community, and spread out even more and help a nation, and spread out even more and help a world, in order to grow, to be uplifted, and to become purified in that light. And each of us in our own small way can contribute to that. Bring the light of God. And when we think about that, that is the light of God, and that has infinite power and potential, that is no small thing. But it can be a great thing. And it will be exactly as God wants it to be. And whatever way that expresses itself, we can give great gratitude for that and thanksgiving. Just stop there and see if there are any questions about the sadhana or the path or anything you would like. Or silence, too, if that's what you would like.
When you're going along and you know that it's, well, it's like there's some blocks there, no idea what. Is there things you can do, I guess I want to say, to slowly the process along, or are you just supposed to kind of sit back and go, okay, this is the way things are, now I'm going to look at that, you know?
There's two sayings from the Bible that Mother used to quote. One is, resist the devil and he will flee, and resist ye not evil. And on the surface, those seem to be contradictory strategies for what you do when you're faced with obstructions and difficulties. But I think that they're, depending on the situation, we're called upon to do either one of those. Sometimes we are called upon with tremendous will to break through barriers and obstacles and difficulties, calling upon that force of light and that intelligence that's within us. And other times, the more we seem to push against it, the more the opposition grows. And then we don't resist it. We just become the observers of it. We just watch it. And I don't think that there's any real rule as to say which you apply at any particular time. You become like the craftsman who learns the materials, and you experiment and you push around a little bit with one. You become the witness for a while. You push against it for a while. And you look to use the tools that you have in order to remove those obstacles. One of the great things that Papa Ram Dass gave to us was the clarity of vision that God as grace is residing in you now, and that that grace, that light, is more powerful than any difficulty or any obstacle you might be facing. And to surrender yourself to that grace And I think one of the ways that that works is that when we feel that we are the doer, I need to do this. I need to get myself going here. I need to gear myself up to overcome this obstacle. That just implicit in that assumption is I feel like I'm the small person with this will who's going to do this thing that goes up against this obstacle. And we've already faced our defeat almost in that moment, because maybe we've done that many times and we've not been successful at it. But when we take one step back from that and we say, God, it's God who's the doer here. I'm not the doer. I'm the witness. And then you feel for that place where that flow of divine light and grace comes through you. You say, okay, what should I do now? And you just open yourself to that information. And with what power am I going to do that? And you open yourself up to the flow of that power. You act according to that guidance and that power in that moment. And of course the ego will jump right in there and say, but, what about all this and this and this and this? And they'll bring in everything that might go wrong, or everything that you've tried in the past and it hasn't seemed to work and all of that. And you just set that aside. That's the ego as the doer. You set that aside. And it's not become passive in the sense that you are opening yourself to this intelligence and this grace, and then you're acting according to that. So in the beginning, that might be getting a hint as to what you should do. Well, maybe I could try this. And then you try it. And as you get more and more into that flow, you actually feel that intelligence and that power flowing through you and doing the action, and you are the witness. You're a cooperative witness. You're moving in along with this flow as it's flowing through you. But you feel as if you are not the doer, that it's being done through you, and you are the witness of what's going on. It's not a passive place in the sense of a tamasic state or a negative, depressed state where I can't do anything right or I'm no good here. Those kinds of thoughts and feelings don't have any place in this kind of thing I'm describing here. This is positive. It's powerful. It's in a flow. You have a sense of peace and purposefulness. And when you have that, you feel as if you're doing exactly what you ought to be doing in that moment. Even though you may have random thoughts here and there, what about this and what about that? You let those go. And you just pay attention to what's going on now. Once in a while I have thoughts go through my head and I'll think, well, I wonder what life is going to look like when I get back from India. I haven't a clue. But my mind will go there every once in a while, and I'll think, I wonder what that will be like. Where will we live? What will happen? All of that. What I have is I have complete trust that the intelligence and power that is operating in me in this moment will be equally operating in me at that moment, 4 months into the future. And that I will be led, guided, directed in the way that will fulfill that inner light within me. And I know that. I know that that's true. And whatever that looks like, however that turns out, will be for the highest good of all. So I don't have to add the burden of 4 months from now to what I'm doing right now. Of course, that's easier said than done oftentimes. But so important in order for us to be able to listen in this moment to what I should be doing in this moment. Because all that noise about the future, about the past, about the what-ifs interferes with that flow of knowledge and power in this moment. So I practice letting those things go and just focusing on this moment at this time, dealing with what I have right in front of me. And that is sufficient. Doesn't mean that we don't ever plan. Sometimes that flow is about creating plans for the future, thoughts for the future, what's going to happen. And when that's true, then that's the flow that we're in at that moment, and that's fine. But again, we feel centered, we feel a calm, we feel at peace. We don't feel frantic or anxious about it. That's not being in the flow, it's not a quality of it. You know, with these terrorist activities and at other times, we hear that this is God's will that this be done. You know, that I run this airplane into this building and kill all these people. That's God's will. Well, how do you argue with that? What do you say to that? Who is to say that that's not God's will? But the spiritual masters that we follow start out with a very basic premise, and that is that realization of God is the real purpose for which we were born. What does that realization look like? How would we recognize it? One is that it gives us the universal vision. We see God as the all in all, the creative force that has gone into making up all. Through that universal vision, we feel divine love flowing through us and compassion for the world. From that love and compassion, service automatically springs. We want to serve this world and the people in it. We want to see everyone raised up into spiritual consciousness and to find their own infinite potential that resides within them. We have that sympathy and that love for everybody. And those are the qualities that let us know that we are in that God-tuned state. And so through those qualities, we touch that fabric. We get the quality of it. We get a feeling for it through touching it within our own lives, through reading about the saints and how they describe their own experiences. We get a clearer and clearer sense of what that fabric feels like. Now, when somebody says that they are doing the will of God, but they have none of those qualities in them, there's no universal vision, there's no compassion, there's no love, there's no service. When those ingredients are missing, then we have to question, is that really God's will? Or is that egotistical impulses that are being channeled through religious channels and being said, well, this is God's will, but actually it's the ego speaking. And certainly when somebody expresses hatred and intolerance and the rest of it, I don't think that we can look at that and say, that's fulfilling God's will. It's just, it doesn't have the feel. It doesn't have the sense of it at all. And we would have to say no. They're off base there. Even so, within your own life, you can judge the quality of your own thoughts, the quality of your own inner direction. Does it have those qualities to it? Does it have that touch, that feel of that divine presence? And when it does, we can be assured to go forward with that. And even if we make a mistake, by holding on to that hem of that fabric, and not letting go of it and saying, does this have the feel of God to it? If we make a mistake, pretty soon we'll be thinking, no, I've lost it. I've lost that signal. It doesn't have the right feel to it. It doesn't have the right touch to it. And then we go back and we get back to where we made those earlier decisions and we go, okay, where does the light take to me? And in that way, we can combine our intuition and our reasoning in order to more finely tune ourselves to that infinite consciousness flowing through us. And our own experience guides us and teaches us. And as you do that, you keep feeling for that. You keep sensing for that. And in the beginning, it can be just, is this a good thing? You know, just strictly through the reasoning mind. Is it good for me? Is it good for the people around me? When you sense those kind of invisible barriers, there's this brick wall over here, and you're not even sure what that is, you can just think, okay, here's this brick wall. What am I to do about this? Is this one of those times that I take out the battering ram and I knock it down? Is it one of those times that I just sit and I wait? Do I call upon that inner light to show me the direction, show me what to do? And that is why that having rules and laws is very limited in its scope. But touching in with God experience has unlimited potentiality and can see you through any kind of obstacle, any kind of difficulty at all, and gives you the right direction in that moment. So by turning your mind inward that way and sensing for that, you're teaching yourself to do that, to keep going back to that. And with everything that comes into your life, you continue to sense for that, to feel for that, and let that be your guide. Let that be your resource. Sometimes it'll be to resist it. No, I will not go that way. I will not do that. And other times it's, I just need to be the witness here and step back. And so it's this dance of sometimes moving in, sometimes moving out, sometimes stepping to the side, sometimes stepping back. And you get a feeling for it, for when you're in that flow, when you're in that presence. And of course, meditation is very good for us in that way, that it teaches us to attune ourselves to those, that still, small voice that's inside, that we have to have a certain amount of quietness in order to hear it. And if we're too noisy with all the things of the world, it drowns out that still, small voice. So does that help in terms of, it's not an answer that, you know, you can just say, okay, here's column A and here's column B and this is what I do here. But it's more kind of get a feeling for the process that goes on within yourself. And using every experience that comes into your life as a way of learning more about that. It makes it possible. It's not always easy. And what happens is that as we grow in our trust and our attunement to that, then it does become easier. Then sometimes we drop through the trap door and we go down to that more difficult level and all of a sudden we feel like a neophyte again. But that's...
Those more difficult times are easier to grab onto things, though, because you know then you can really sense that there's nothing to do but pray. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. work on that God connection. That's the times when I do best at that, you know, it's...
Well, when you say difficult, if you mean outer things, things in the outer... sometimes it's the invisible things that are inside of us. They're the toughest because they're the hardest to get our hands on.
Yeah, that's right.
They're more elusive. One thing we can depend on is that we can never lose them, those negative oppositional forces. If we could, I mean, I'd be teaching you how to lose them because that'd be a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, you go off into high-speed chase and they go away someplace. They will always come to you. And so that is where getting quiet and just listening and just observing, and they'll make themselves more manifest. That's invisible something. I don't know what it is. I keep on trying to go in that direction and I just get to this invisible barrier and I can't go any further. Sometimes it's, don't push on it. Just wait. Get quiet. And suddenly, something will emerge into your mind, a memory, some pattern, something will come into your mind and you'll just know, oh, okay, that's what that is. And 9 times out of 10, it will be fear. You'll be afraid of something, losing yourself, losing other people, that you'll do something wrong, whatever it is, you'll be some fear operating behind there. And many times when we try to knock down the wall of fear, it just gets stronger. Because it doesn't want to get knocked down, because it's in a protective mode. That wall is there to protect you. Try to knock that wall down and it feels like self-destruction. So just to get quiet and to listen. What is this? What is this invisible barrier going on here? And it'll talk to you by coming up into your mind and letting you know exactly what it is. And then you'll realize, I think I always knew that. You know, but I didn't want to let myself know it. When we are in God consciousness, we have that peace. We have that free flow of life. We have that love. And if that is not present in our life, then there is something the matter. There is something blocking us. So we can do it by inference also, that if I don't have those things, then there's something not right here. There's something for me to get beyond, to move through.
Interesting, because the more things in my life drop off where I should have more time for meditation, those things, the more I fill it with all these other little things.
Yes.
These busy little things, I think this is ridiculous. It's kind of funny.
To watch yourself do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to know exactly what you're doing and to have fun doing these things that I never would have. You know, till I'm allowing myself to do stuff, which that's a good thing. I mean, there's good, but I also know that it seems like it's, you know, I say, well, when I have time, I will do more meditation. And I've got more time, and I'm doing all these earthly things that I've never done before, and I'm having a great time at that. But I'm still not doing the meditation.
For some college students, you can always know when exam times are around because their rooms are clean. Rather than study, they'll clean their room. Suddenly that becomes the more enjoyable alternative, you know. You'd rather do anything than that.
It's like I really do even face whatever it is right now that needs to, you know.
Yeah.
Boy, it must be big. What is it?
I'm cleaning my room. What's wrong? Must be something really big wrong here. So you can do it by inference, and you go, oh, that's, you know, because it's easy to kind of shift your attention over here and busy your life, and you go, oh, I wonder why I do that. And it seems very casual, but when you try to move into that, oh, you feel how powerful it is. And you say, oh, this isn't some small thing. This isn't me just kind of being, twittering my time away. This is me really avoiding something inside. And just with your breathing, and by being the witness, just kind of ease into it. Just get curious about it. Be a Sherlock Holmes and just say, wonder what this is. What is this all about? And just ease yourself into it. You don't have to break down the walls. Just get curious about it. What is behind this wall? And without trying to force it, just become a witness. Breathe into it. Just stay with it and see where it takes you. Oftentimes, just by doing that, you'll just move right into the center of it and you'll just move on out of it. Because whatever is being contained in that can only exist in the darkness. And once you bring the light of your own being into it, it dissipates it. And so whatever that might be that's behind there, just determined to get curious about it, to explore it, to be with it. Just that. Nothing more. If we go after more than that, oftentimes we set up resistance. It just gets very, very stiff. So it's just, you drop down through that trap door and suddenly you're fighting in the dark. And it feels like there's something dark and shadowy moving out there, but you can't see it. That's all right. It'll come to you.
Yeah. And it's just real elusive because I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah.
And usually I'll have some idea.
All that means is that you've dropped down through that trap door and you're in this new area and, it's keeping itself at bay. It's keeping itself further away from you, but it's coming. It's coming. And so just to have patience and courage with it. Just hang in there with it. So courage and, Shirdi Sai Baba said, have courageous patience. And that's sometimes the hardest thing that we can do, is to have that courageous patience. But just every day, and that's where if we keep our appointment with God every day, by just coming in, I had one friend who said it's he went and he faced the wall every day. Just inwardly in his mind, he is facing the wall every day. And he's facing himself, is what he is doing. But that was his challenge. That was his way of entering into it. And so if you go in every day and you say, all right, here I am. I've got this time and I'm keeping this commitment. And you just breathe into it and you be the witness. And it's amazing how much can resolve itself just by being the witness, just by breathing. We wouldn't think so, especially when things seem very big. But I love the story of the room that was in darkness for 1,000 years. And one day, a window was opened, the light came in, and the light dissipated, the darkness like that. And yet it seemed that darkness was the absolute ruler for 1,000 years. But the moment those rays of light came in, light and darkness cannot coexist. And you bring that light with you. And that's why the resistance is so strong, is because you're bringing that light with you. And yet you don't have to really do anything about it except breathe into it and be the witness. And that automatically brings the light into it.
That brings up an interesting question. When you say bring the light in, do you envision light? I mean, light like that or light,
Some people envision light. They see light. Other people feel it as a presence, as a vibration. Whatever's strongest for you, and it may vary in different situations. But again, you bring it with you automatically, and so whether you visualize light or see light with your inner eye or not, doesn't make any difference. It's there. You can't not have it. And especially when you're attuning yourself to it, when you're aligning yourself with it, then it's just automatically there. And so you don't even have to do anything special other than just bring your awareness there. And the moment you bring your awareness there, you bring the light with you. But as the Bible says, the darkness hateth the light. Not neutral to it, it hates it. It's its antithesis. Because it's the polar opposite of what the light is. Darkness wants to bring things in. It wants to close things off. It wants to contract. Light wants to open things up. It wants to be expansive. And it's consciousness. It's in Sat Chit Ananda. Chit is consciousness. It's to be awake. It's to be aware. And so that's one of the qualities of God consciousness, is chid. When you bring that awake, aware witness with you, you are bringing that God consciousness with you. And residing within that is the eternal self. That part of you who has always existed and will always exist. And that's the other aspect of that divine consciousness. And then the third is the ananda, is the feeling of God in bliss, in peace, in joy. And so any one of those touchstones is the light that's within you. If you have that sense of your eternal existence, that self, then that is your light. If you are consciously aware and awake, that is your light. If you have that peace, that joy, that bliss, that is your light. So it's very simple. You don't have to kind of get into the mind, because the mind is not necessarily your best ally in this. It's any one of those qualities. And for some people, seeing light, or sometimes their inner eye is opening and they see the light. And that's fine too. But the light is the light of your own being. It's a great life, isn't it? To know that you're on the path, know that you're learning, that you're making the effort. How many lifetimes have we waited for that? To be so thoroughly ensconced and on the path. And even though we feel like we don't quite know what we're doing, or we're kind of, you know, I'm not sure about any of this, nevertheless, just to be in the arena. Teddy Roosevelt says, sweat might be pouring down and blood, and even if we lose, it's all right. Just knowing that we're in the arena is good enough.
It is nice to feel that way. I mean, to have that sense of whatever goes on.
Mm-hmm. I'm in the arena. I'm exactly where I ought to be. And life is exactly as it ought to be. It's a tremendous power in that thought. So oftentimes we're just resisting life. It shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't be hard. It shouldn't be this, you know, I should be famous, or I should be rich, or I should be, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is. And to say that life is exactly as it ought to be. And isn't it wonderful? Isn't it joyful? It's a joyful expression. We were talking earlier about life being, you know, sinful, or, you know, darkness, or who rules this earth and all of that. And a common notion in today's Christianity is that God has consigned over the world to the devil. And so that there is this imminent split between the world. Now, for the Yoni, it can be useful to see this world as an illusion. This is not my reality. Everything that's in the world changes. And even if I had the most perfect life in the whole world, I would change. I would grow old, I would be subject to illness, and I would die. Therefore, it is imperfect. It cannot be the source of my eternal joy. And from that standpoint, I can say, it is sinful in the sense of the original meaning of the word, which is to miss the mark, like an archer misses the mark. This is where I thought I would get my happiness, is by orchestrating my life in a certain way that I would get all those things in a line that would bring me happiness. And I've missed the mark, because no matter how perfectly I do that, It'll never be enough, number one. And number two, even if it were enough, I would leave it someday. And therefore, it's incomplete. It can't be my lasting happiness. And in that sense, this world cannot be my fulfillment. It cannot be my lasting happiness. And when I look to it to be that, then I have missed the mark. And it's not until I make my first goal is the establishment of that pure spiritual consciousness that's within me as the source of my lasting happiness, then I will continue to miss the mark as long as I don't have that as my first goal. But when I make that as my first goal, then I've put this world in its proper perspective. Then I can be in this world but not of this world. And I'm not mistaking my lasting happiness for the happiness that comes and goes in this lifetime. And from that standpoint, you could say, metaphysically, that the devil has control of this world, that delusive force that promises so much and doesn't deliver on it. So that's the yoni, where we separate out what is real from what is unreal. Anything that can come and go is unreal. And that even includes God-conscious states, blissful states, that we're uplifted and we move in and out of it, in and out of it. And even that is not the absolute consciousness that we're looking for. And so we even cut that away and say, no, I want that absolute consciousness that is present with me all the time. Visions come, or even manifestations of great masters, great avatars that have come on this earth. And even those, they come and they go. Therefore, there's a delusive aspect to them. And we cut that away. Those are very, you know, when Krishna and Jesus appeared to Papa and he said, take away these manifestations and give me the pure universal vision where I see you all the time. I see this whole universe, it's your manifestation. That's what I want. I don't want you to come to me in a form that will come and go. Who could do that? What renunciation, what clarity and purity of thought. And yet, no, take that away. Give me the pure vision of your universal form, where I see everything as your form, not just a manifestation of one body, and all people as your form. It's absolutely spectacular that you have the awareness and the knowledge and the purity of mind to do that. And so even that, you can say, is sinful. It's missing the mark if we put all of our eggs into that basket. Until we have that clarity and purity of mind that we can make that universal consciousness our goal, then we will have missed the mark. But once we do that, then we see this entire manifestation as an expression of the divine consciousness. And the yoni is no more needed. We have what Papa calls para-bhakti, supreme bhakti, supreme love affair with God, where everything is God. And then we can chase down people like Papa did and try to hug them and say, you are he, you are he. Of course, they're running away and saying, you're crazy, you're crazy. Yes, I'm mad for God, I'm mad for Ram. But you see, then it's all a delightful expression. You're not self-conscious, you don't care. Because it is all God. We let go of what other people think. That's a hard one. It's a hard one. We're so enculturated into don't disappoint other people, don't be different from other people. We need other people to like us. All of those things. Rules, rules, rules going on in our head. And to let those go and to move into that universal vision. And we can't move into that universal vision until we let those things go. I need to be straight with God first. If I'm straight with God, everything else is just as it should be. even if other people are upset with me or disappointed in me or hurt by what I'm doing, if I'm right with God, then so be it. But as mentioned earlier, we should have those qualities of what it is to be in God consciousness. And that's how we can distinguish between those who say, well, this is God's will. And, you know, I always get a kick out of people who start on some project and say, well, it's God's will that I start on this. They get so far in the project and they get some obstacles and they say, well, that must be God telling me not to go further. Well, nothing of any worth has ever been started out that doesn't have extreme obstacles set up in it. So you're never going to fulfill anything. You're just going to be bouncing from place to place. That knowledge has to come from someplace deeper in ourselves than signs or symbols or things out there. It has to come from in here, in the deepest recesses of our own soul. Then we can stand on it. Then it becomes a solid foundation to operate from. Otherwise, it's just shifting sand. Sitting in silence and feeling the vibration, the presence, that infinite spirit within you, hearing the sound of Om, seeing the light within your third eye point. In that state of consciousness, you are the light of the world. You become transfigured into that spiritual power and presence and intelligence. And by surrendering yourself to it completely, you become absorbed into its vibration, into the light. When in body, mind, and soul, you have purified yourself to the point that there is no longer an I and a thou, a God outside and a God inside, or a God outside and an ego inside. Rather, you are the complete whole. You are a manifestation of that omniscient spirit. When you enter into silence and you open yourself to that infinite vibration, you're gaining entry into that most wonderful state of consciousness. Receive it. Open yourself to it and receive it. And it will guide you in all situations, in all aspects of your life. When you surrender yourself completely, it gives everything to you. The irony is, at that moment, you find you want nothing but to reside in that presence. And what it chooses to do through you, you are but a witness to it. In becoming empty of the old ego self, you become filled with that infinite omniscience, gratitude and thanksgiving. You offer yourself completely to that most high light within you. And feel yourself to be the most fortunate born when it absorbs you. And you discover who and what you truly are. God and the Masters are present. They are ever present. In their infinite nature, they cannot help but be present. But how great that presence is when you become conscious of it. Stay, I bow to the light within you.